Hello, everyone, and welcome to the San Juan Snowcast. I'm your host, Chris. Today is Wednesday, March 24th, 2022, and this is episode 22. Hey, folks. Well, this week's show, it's going to be a bit different. For those who don't know, last Thursday, March 17th, on St. Patrick's Day, at around 2:30 p.m., Telluride local legend Devin Overton was bootpacking up a steep, west-facing slope on the flanks of Pallet Knob when the slope collapsed underneath him and avalanched. Devin was buried about 6 feet deep in the debris, and he didn't make it. He was alone, as he often was, and I would like to imagine that he was having the best day, as he often was, right up until the moment that that all changed. After something like this happens, it just never feels right to continue with business as usual. And talking about the weather, the last storm, the avalanche hazard, yeah, those are important factors in how we engage with the backcountry. But right now, I just can't do it. I've lost the urge to go skiing. And that's probably because my relationship with avalanches often shifts from curious fascination to downright fear to anger to hate. And right now, I really hate avalanches. I hate the fact that an avalanche can suddenly turn one of the greatest experiences in the world, carefree, gravity-fed snow sliding, into the worst day of your life. In just a matter of seconds. It is hands down the worst thing about backcountry skiing. And it's what makes living this lifestyle so damn hard and tragic and heartbreaking. And sometimes I just want to leave these mountains and their fucked up, unstable snowpack behind. Because how many times can we just accept that this is the possible outcome of playing in the backcountry around here? How many friends are you going to lose to these mountains? And how do we justify going back out there? This week's show is all about dealing with that and how I've dealt with that and how I'm still trying to figure that all out and how I'm trying really hard not to just give up on all of it. But more than that, I also want to talk about Devin and how I knew him and who I knew him to be. And how we deal with losing someone who lived their life to the fullest. I want to celebrate how he inspired me and the Telluride community to go big. And I know this is not the usual snow and avalanche update you have come to expect, but guess what? Not a lot has changed. And yeah, we got a few inches on Monday and Tuesday. But that said, if you're about to hit pause on this episode because of all that, what I just said, then I urge you to stay. Because if you recreate in the backcountry, and if you ski or ride an avalanche terrain in the San Juans, then the death of a friend is something that you should absolutely think long and hard about. Because too often, we just forget about the dark side of our sport. We forget that we lose loved ones each and every season. We forget that it only takes a split second or a few feet to make the difference between life or death in these hills. I think we too often take for granted the inherent risk that's involved in simply sliding on snow in the backcountry. And I want this episode to serve as a stark reminder for all of us to continuously ask ourselves, is it worth it? Why am I doing this? What level of risk do I really want backcountry skiing to add to my life? And am I truly being aware of the risks that I'm taking when I go out for a ski tour? So sit down and strap in. Because things are going to get real, raw, and honest. And because the Snowcast starts now. Last Thursday was St. Patrick's Day. Last Thursday was Bluebird. Last Thursday was a great day up until about 3:30 p.m. That morning, I stopped by Jagged Edge, and I chatted with John Miller before I strapped some huge bundles of red and green flags to the outside of my pack, and I hopped on the chairlifts of the Telluride Ski Resort. Before I knew it, I was skinning around in the woods below Chair 14 to help set the course for the Tellurando Skimo race that went down on Saturday. It was a beautiful morning, and everything glistened, silently and softly, as I plodded my way through the forest, tying long streamers of green flagging onto branches at each twist and turn of the track. As I was skinning along, it was fun to imagine the strung-out racers following my path as they made the final push to the finish line. It took me about an hour and a half, and when I was finished with the job, I texted my buddy Coop, "Upper's lap?" Forty-five minutes later, and we're boot packing up the Gold Hill Ridgeline. It's late, already 1 p.m., and I have an event that I need to help set up for at 3:30. Coop and I side-eye the creek as we boot up. Not many new tracks out there today. Yeah, just a few in the hippie roller. But man, the snow looks good. Not as much wind effect as I was expecting. And with that, we agree, and make a hasty plan to beeline for the smooth-looking north-facing pow fields and going fast as far as we can until we run out of time. We top out the boot pack, click into our skis and board, check our beacons, and carry speed to the transition point, down and right of the mighty San Joaquin. As we skin upwards, we chat about the usual stuff. "Hey man, do you think there's a wind slab up on that ridge? When do you leave again for off-season? Do you think we could squeeze in a desert backpacking trip in April?" Suddenly, the skin track we're following cuts left. Do you think these folks bailed on T12 because of the wind? Should we go for it? We stop, make some observations, discuss, and decide to keep going. Later, and we're on top of our line, having skinned across some wind-textured snow that looked slabby from below, but proved to be quite soft. From the ridge, I look out to the Wands. I can see my house, we look to the east and see Silverton, then the Weminooch, and down south to Lizard Head Pass. I check the clock. We've got about an hour to get down, get changed, and for me to make it to this event. "Hey man, let's boogie," I say, as I rip my skins with haste. We chat about how to navigate the pitch, and how we should carry speed over the moraine humps in the runout. Then Coop says, "All right, man, give her." And I drop. Weightless for a moment, then skis sailing smoothly through light, dry powder, and I arc fast in long GS turns down the face, the same way Devin always did. We carry our speed, taking turns leapfrogging down pitches, and before we know it, we're down on the road, tucked low to stay sliding on the warm and slushy out track. On the road, we see some friends, share our stories, and then do what we always do. Skate the river trail back to Oak, where every good day in Bear Creek ends with some barbecue and cold beer. It was St. Patrick's Day. Spirits were high, and Coop found two $5 bills sitting in the middle of the out track. So yeah, we were going to order some Irish car bombs. Two friends joined in, and at 3:10 p.m., we all raised our glasses high, unknowingly toasting to the highs of a good day in the backcountry at the same exact moment that Devin left the backcountry for the last time ever. Half hour later, I got the SAR text. It read, "Stand by for a backcountry mission. Possible skier buried in avalanche in Poverty Gulch." And immediately, my heart just sank. We'd been doing so good all season long in the Wands. And now an avalanche burial on this day of moderate hazard in our backyard zone? I was confused, and I started running through the list of friends. Okay, Mason's at work. Slater's injured. Paul's sick. Who else would be over there? I texted Coop. "You gonna respond?" He replied, "I'm gonna try." Like many other folks in the San Juans, I knew of Devin long before I ever met him in person. I moved here in 2015, a naive, wide-eyed, gung-ho, up-and-coming skier, and I immediately wanted to tick every big line that I could see. And I wanted to know who were these Telluride elite who seemed to have unlocked the secrets to riding the biggest and baddest lines around in style. Somebody mentioned Devin's name, and I immediately looked him up on Instagram. Now, coming of age in the proliferation of social media, I have a complicated relationship with things like Instagram. But one of the things I thought was awesome was that in following Devin, I basically got the conditions reports on what was happening in the backcountry around Telluride. The guy just seemed to be always out there, always finding the good snow, and I literally followed in his footsteps. I can't even tell you how many times I saw Devin post about what he rode that day on Instagram, and then went out and did the exact same thing the following day. I literally followed in his footsteps countless times before we ever even spoke in person. And his footsteps were huge. Literally, the guy had long legs. And even just 3 weeks ago, this winter, I found myself in a Devin Overton booter, where every step felt just 6 inches too tall for me and my short legs. But eventually, Devin began to catch on. And starting in 2019, on Instagram, we began to play one of my favorite social media backcountry skiing games. Guess the line. I'd post something, and he'd reply with, "Ah, that looks familiar," or, "I was just there yesterday," or, later on, "It appears we have very similar taste for lines." Unbeknownst to Devin, he was one of my first mentors in Telluride. It's totally weird to say that and to think of it like that, but that's one of the interesting things about social media, how someone can have an impact on your life without even knowing it, and just because of what they put out there for the world to see. Devin's feats impressed and inspired me, and also at times scared me and humbled me. He'd post some obscure couloir footage, and I'd literally spend an hour on Google Earth trying to find it in our local terrain. I felt a connection to him, that he was equally as obsessed, equally committed, and equally driven to exploring the mountains of our backyard. He showed me just how much was out there and just how big you could go. And he did a lot of it alone. Truth be told, I haven't spent a lot of time talking on here about traveling solo in the backcountry, other than to say, don't do it, because frankly, I don't want any of you to think that it's a good idea. It's really not. And at the same time, I've spent a good chunk of my backcountry career struggling with my own conflicts around being alone in avalanche terrain. And that's because there is a certain type of person that gets a lot out of being alone in challenging environments. I don't know if it goes back to our caveman days, but there is something undeniably life-altering for some people when they go out into the wilderness and test their limits without the safety net of a partner. There is no one else out there to hold you back, slow you down, question your decision-making, or help you if you get hurt. It all falls on your shoulders. And I know that for some people, the decision to go out alone just seems reckless, risky, or completely unnecessary. But for a certain type of person, it can be the thing that truly makes them feel alive. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not condoning it, just hear me out. And I think a really helpful metaphor for thinking about this is that skiing in avalanche terrain alone is essentially the same as free solo climbing. Just in the same way that there is no rope and no one holding it if you fall, in the backcountry, if you're alone, there's no one there to dig you out of an avalanche. If you fall free soloing, you die. And if you get caught and buried skiing solo, you also probably die. There is zero room for error. Now, again, I'm in no way justifying this way of engaging with the backcountry, but I feel like it's time for me to publicly own up to the fact that I've done it too. I'm sure many of us have. But I'll be honest, I've skied some of the biggest and most committing lines of my life completely and utterly alone. In a way, it's a very personal decision to go out alone, and what follows is a very personal experience. No one will ever see just how close you were to the edge, and no one is there to witness how you struggled through the hard parts or blissfully existed in the flow state. It's all just in your head, in your memory. There are close calls that I've had while being alone in the mountains that I've never told anyone about, and I probably never will. I mean, what good would it do other than terrify whoever I told? And if you're someone who likes to go out solo into the mountains during winter or summer, then you've probably been told 1,000 times that it's a bad idea. I know I have. And yet I justify it. I rationalize it. I convince my loved ones that I promise I can be safe, that I will make good decisions out there, and that since I'm alone, I'm going to be more conservative than I would have been otherwise. But those are all promises that I can't keep. I don't know that I'm going to be safe out there. I can't promise that. I've done my fair share of free soloing in the mountains on rock, and all it would have taken was one loose rock, one loose hold, or one moment of lapsed judgment. I know that shit can happen beyond our control, because I've been witness to it time and again. I've had friends slip, fall, and die, or get hit by rockfall and die, or get buried in avalanches and die. And you know what? It never gets easier. And trying to figure out why we keep going back to these mountains, that never gets simpler. We know that the possibility of tragedy exists, and yet we go anyways. Earlier in the season, I made the same promise I make every winter. I'm not going to ski alone in avalanche terrain. But then I did it. And I used an emotional argument to convince my fiance that it was a good idea. I said something like, "It's been a rough week. I just need to get out and breathe some fresh air. I just need some alone time to think." And then I went out there and I did it. And I got away with it. And it was fun. And there are some local Telluride dads who've been getting away with it for decades. Devin, he was one of the people I was convinced would always get away with it. And he did, for years. I've said it before on here, that no POW day is worth your life. But that is so hard to understand and wrap your head around. And it's really hard to understand what that means when death by avalanche can feel so untangible or unpredictable. I mean, we read about it in the news, we see the stats on the CIC website, but until it happens to someone you know, it remains this distant, remote, tragic for sure, but come on, it'll never happen to me or someone I know. Until it does. I think I let myself believe that Devin was invincible, especially after he made a full recovery from a very close call a few years back that nearly killed him. But Devin was human, just like the rest of us. And I just wish I could have told him how much of an impact he has had on me, both in life and now in death. You know, this winter, him and I finally met in person and connected, and we started to become better friends. When I launched this podcast in the fall, he reached out to me almost immediately with words of support and encouragement. And I know for a fact that he listened to every episode because he told me. We had been talking about having him on the podcast to tell some of his stories, and I was hoping to make it happen all before the end of the winter. And the last time I saw Devin, well, it was on Wednesday, the day before the avalanche. I was just sitting on my front porch debriefing the day with some local guys who I took out for a guided mentorship day. On our tour, someone pointed to the Himalayan face in Waterfall Canyon and asked, "Has anyone ever skied that?" To which I replied, "Well, there's only one person bold enough and skilled enough to pull that off. And yeah, Devin rode it a few years back in really good snow." They were shocked. And suddenly, the mythical Devin came by the porch, just to say, "Hey, and how's it going?" I chatted with Dev about the conditions out there, and he said he was sticking to north-facing trees that day. He even made a point to say, "Yeah, the dragon is still lurking out there, and we're certainly not out of the woods yet." He waved goodbye and sauntered down the road to the trailhead for a few solo laps. Devin was trying to rack up 1,000,000 vertical feet in the backcountry this winter. And he was doing it to raise awareness about mental health and suicide prevention. As such, he was doing a lot of solo laps, mostly on well-traveled terrain. But I never had it in me to ask, "Hey man, do you think it's a good idea to go out there alone all the time?" And I didn't ask because I'd been asked the same question, and I knew how it made me feel. Guilty, shameful. Instead, I just waved goodbye to Devin, and I said something like, "Enjoy it out there, man." And that was the last time that I ever saw him. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. I am sorry. I know this one was pretty dark and down, but it was real, and sometimes we just gotta be real with each other. Well, this episode was mostly about my relationship to Devin, but there are so many people who knew him way better than I did. Being born and raised in the San Juans, Devin had a huge impact on folks all over. And in honoring his life, I would love to reflect on how he impacted the community through stories and remembrances from the people that knew him best. If you want to share something, a funny story, a memory, to honor and remember Devin, you can record a 30-second to 1-minute voice memo and email it to sanjuansnowcast@gmail.com. I'd love to feature an audio memorial in next week's show. Speaking of which, a celebration for the life of Devin is scheduled for Monday, February 28th from 3 to 8 p.m. at the Telluride Transfer Warehouse. It's a celebration of Stoke, and all who were touched by Devin's life are welcome to attend. The music on this week's show was a serious departure from the funk and featured several tracks from Dr. Turtle, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. On next week's show, we're going to return to some of the regularly scheduled programming with a snow and weather update, but also hopefully some more good stories about Devin. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope that wasn't too tough to listen to. It was certainly not easy to say, but I just think that being authentic and honest in moments of tragedy, well, it's important. It's important for our own healing, and it's important for our communities. Let's face it, this is the reality that we deal with in the backcountry ski community. And we should all take a moment to reevaluate, reflect, and reprioritize just how we think about living our lives. And with that, remember to take care of each other out there, friends, and play safe. And until next time, think snow.